We're heading now to a deer milking shed near Taupō. It's the tail end of milking at Pāmu's Aratiatia deer milking unit, and I'm with farm manager Robbie Smith.
I'd never milked deer before I started this, or dairy for that matter. Very green to dairy and to milk. Initially, I had a giggle about it and thought, you know, these guys are crazy with my past experience of farming deer. And then sort of the idea sort of grew on me, and yeah, here I am today, and I love it. It's awesome. There's so many unknowns, and there's so many learnings, and it's great.
Robbie certainly knows his deer. He used to work on Pāmu's venison farms. The animals about to be milked are the same type, red deer.
They're a Landcorp breed from Focus Genetics, and they've got an age structure of sort of from anywhere between a first fauna to a 10-year-old. There's a bit of a variety of age amongst them, and yeah, we do find initially the younger ones are probably better suited to this because they don't know any better, so we're sort of they're easier to train.
So it looks like you have several holding pens before they actually get to the parlour.
There's what we call a bit of a breakdown. So we've got a large yard outside, and we take small cuts out of that larger yard, and then they slowly drip into the shed, probably 20 odd at a time.
So why do you do it that way?
Just keep them cool, calm, and collect, really, yeah. They don't like to be sort of mobbed up and bigger mobs coming to the shed. That's sort of, we want to look after the girls, so, yeah, we don't want them banging and crashing around and landing on top of each other.
Pāmu, also known as Landcorp, the state-owned farming enterprise, is in its third season milking here, and they've got a good feel now for what makes a good milking deer.
I guess trying to find the perfect hind is hard work. More often than not, the better suited ones are sort of have got a little bit of go amongst them. Like we've probably taken more out that are non-suited because they're too quiet than we have for the from the other end of the scale from being too flighty.
Really? Yeah. Why would too quiet be a problem?
Too quiet because we're pushing them around all day. We don't want to be pushing them around all day. It becomes quite long, and sort of we are in the heat of summer usually.
Are the deer waiting to come into milking, or do you have to cajole them in?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that trained like dairy cows just yet, and I think it will happen with time. But for now, we certainly have to sit behind them and give them a bit of a hurry up to sort of, it's time to go, girls. We initially gave them treats of deer nuts and stuff like that to sort of help relax them in the stalls, but we've gone away from that now, and we sort of give them their treats in the paddock. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take one hind up at a time into the stall, and that's a pretty simple sort of calm process.
It takes 5 hours to milk the herd of 175 deer. They're milked once a day from January through to May, a much shorter season than for dairy cows. One of the two milking assistants from Wales is there to give a hand.
My name is Aled Phillips. I'm from Wales and I'm 20 years old. I've been here now 11 months I have, and my visa's until November, so me and my best friend are over here living the dream.
Are you from a farming background yourself?
I am, yes. I've worked on a dairy farm for about 8 years at home, and I've been brought up on a beef farm, so got plenty of livestock experience behind me, I'd like to think. It's very different to what I'm used to, animal-wise, but they all have the same kind of instincts, and handling deer is something I've never done before, and I'd like to think I've become pretty good at it the last few months and being so close to them. In the start, you needed a lot of patience, breaking the new deer into the mob especially, but it's crazy how well they've adapted to their surroundings, and I found it very surprising how easily you could just be around the deer, you know, and how tame they were, especially now. They're running into the parlour and they want to be milked, so we've even given some of them a few names. One of them is called Spud. Chungus is another one. She's quite big, so we gave her the name, and, they stand out from the crowd, so, their personalities as well, so.
What do your family think when you tell them you're milking deer?
Oh, they were loving it, yeah, because obviously, it's not something you can do back in Wales. So, doing it over here, they were like, oh, that's an amazing experience for you.
Have you tasted it, the milk?
I have. I've had a little sample of it. I like to put it in the coffee I do sometimes.
What does it taste like?
It's quite creamy, and it's a bit sweeter than cow milk, I like to think. But, yeah, I'm a big fan of it, yeah.
So we're in a stall with four of the hinds.
We are. Pretty cool story here, actually. These four hinds here, three of the four, they come off another Pamu farm end of February. They were just straight venison hinds. They were first fawners, and we bought them in just to see if we could milk them. And with that, 93% of them let us milk them the day after weaning, which is an awesome result, and gave them a new purpose in life. And they love it. Look, they're nice and calm. And
do they produce much milk?
In the comparison to dairy, I wouldn't say they do, no. What they do produce is very valuable.
How much do they produce a day?
It is varied. Yeah, and in comparison to
dairy. Come on, tell us. You're hiding. I've heard they produce only about a litre a day.
You wouldn't be far off, yeah.
Which is quite not a huge amount.
It's not a huge amount, no, but you wouldn't be far off.
With the culling that you must be doing of the herd,
yep.
Are you finding you're able to get that milk production up?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't use the word culling. We're sort of repurposing these hinds from a venison point of view. So if we can use them in here, we'll milk them. If they're not fit for purpose for milking, they'll be sent back onto the hill for to live a good life producing venison.
So if they don't make the cut, what's the cut?
Our perfect hind we talk about. So she's got a little bit of go about her, but she's not too calm. And then obviously on the other end, what we talked about, she's not full of flight. And that's pretty uncommon in sort of our Pamu herd these days. It's been bred out of them. We must remember that these hinds are only 50 years out of the bush. 50 years ago, they were running on top of our ranges and hills across New Zealand.
Yeah, have you got an idea of how much they might be producing in future with the right genetics?
If we can double it, it'd be a good story. Yeah, it's an evolving beast. We're only 3 years in our project here on Aotearoa, and every year we're making gains, both genetically and temperament. Well, I mean, it all goes hand in hand, I guess, is temperament.
Are these deer? Do they go through artificial insemination, or is it a natural breeding?
It's all natural mating. So we select stags from our Pamu stud in the South Island, and they're trucked up here. We're picking on temperament mainly. We've got to deal with these stags for during mating, and they're coming in out of the shed. We try and leave them in the paddock. It's not always the case, so they often do come into the shed during the day with the hinds, and they're nice and quiet. We just draft them out. It's sort of our first job of the morning. We'll send the stags back to the paddock.
The deer have blue and green markings on their backs, part of ongoing research at the unit.
We're just doing individual samples of these girls daily at the moment, just trying to understand where they're falling off as far as the season goes. We're trying to get a better understanding, I guess, of production the later part of the season on a daily sense.
Tell me about the weaning. At what stage are the fawns weaned?
Yep, so they'll start fawning in early November. 10th of January we'll start milking the hinds, and we share milk what we can with the hind and fawn at foot till sort of late January.
So they have a lot longer at foot, the fawns, than a calf or the dairy cow?
They do, yeah. We're aiming for a 12-week lactation on mum. We're getting a beautiful fawn at the end of it. We've got to look after that fawn as well. That's our next generation coming through, so.
What happens to the fawns once they are weaned? Are we going to have bobby deers?
No way. No, there's a huge value in venison, and obviously replacements as well for these to replace these girls as they age out.
All of the fawns would be used in the milking herd eventually?
They'll be given a chance.
With the deers safely in the stalls, which have high sides to keep them calm and remove any temptation to jump out, we head down to the pit to meet Karina Livesey, who's fitting cups onto their udders.
Hey, Karina, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. What are you up to?
Milking here.
Ah.
Now, we're not allowed to show any images of this pit. Why is that, Robbie?
I guess we just have a sense of error with our IP at the moment. It's early days. And
that's
we've
the intellectual
sort of,
property around the whole operation,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah.
Pretty sensitive.
It is sensitive, just in the respect that we are investing a fair bit of money into this at the moment to get it off the ground, and I guess our learnings will become hopefully sort of common in time.
Contacts minimise with the deer, and Karina has to pass the cups through a hole.
Karina's pretty good. She knows most of these girls just by their, I guess, the shape and size of their udder. She's doing it most days, and she's definitely got a relationship with each one, and she can almost understand each hind.
She's just getting your tag number.
How long have you been doing this, Karina?
Doing this? Only since January, but I have prior experience in sheep milking as well as dairy cows.
Oh, how does it compare to sheep milking?
Oh, I milk deer any day. They're just so placid and they just stand there. We are coming to the end of our season, so volumes are down, but there are still some girls really holding on to their milk and could go for quite a bit longer, actually. So, but as you can see, you can do anything with them and they just stand there.
Karina's here for the full 5 hours milking, and while she can't see who she's milking, she can make a good guess.
There are particular udders that I can recognise who they are. Yeah, definitely. Like, I can predict our best milking hind, what she looks like from behind. A couple of others that are probably, they're not overly jumpy, but you know they might just jump a little bit because they'll get a fright, so you just know to go in quietly with them. And
she says not all the udders can hold 4 cups.
Well, as you can see, she can hold 2 quite comfortably on the back and definitely would be able to hold 2 on the front. But we do have some there that have their back teats that will just face inwards a little bit or a bit too close together. They probably couldn't hold the 4. Yeah. So even some of those struggle to hold 2, so we have to stagger them off centre. Yeah. Put 1 on the front and 1 on the back. Yeah. So, but yeah, if we could get them with 4 clusters, it would just, yeah, you'd be able to up production and efficiency of milking.
The milk is then gravity-fed to a vat, put into small bladders and frozen. At the end of the season, it's turned into powdered form at a plant in Hamilton and used in cosmetics, as a nutritional supplement, and by dessert chefs.
This is where the magic happens.
Yeah, this is, our plant. So we capture all of our milk.
Asia is the big market at this stage, and deer milk's potential as a superfood for ageing people is what has Pāmu excited. I caught up with Hamish Glendinning, Pāmu's business lead for deer milking, to find out more.
Since inception, the whole objective has been to back up the benefits of deer milk with science, right? And so that was really exciting when we kicked off the clinical trial in partnership with Massey University and with funding from High Valley Nutrition. And it was to look at the benefits of deer milk from a nutritional perspective and, I guess, validate that it did improve sort of nutritional status and the physical function of aging adults. So when we look at the nutritional profile of deer milk, it's really high in protein, it's really high in calcium relative to other ruminant milks, and it also tastes really delicious. And so part of our hypothesis was that, you know, because a user or consumer doesn't need to drink large amounts of liquid to get some really great nutritional benefits, it had a really interesting role to play in aged nutrition, where the solutions at the moment are largely, you know, fortified beverages, which don't often have high amounts of compliance. And so the study was to really validate whether deer milk, when put up against one of these leading oral nutritional supplements, could I guess, you know, did it match the benefits there, or did it outperform? And we're really excited by the results that we got from that, particularly around the nutritional status. So things like, you know, grip strength and mobility tests that they did. And also there were some really interesting insights around bone density.
So how big is the market then for the milk? I mean, you're sending it off to South Korea and China at this point. What is the potential of the market?
The potential is huge, Sally. I mean, okay, like, I think in New Zealand we sort of sit here and think, you know, deer milk's a bit different, it's a bit strange. who's going to consume that. But, you know, when you get out and travel to places throughout Asia and see, you know, the affinity which some of these markets have with deer and the size of these markets, and then you work that back into the amount of milk that we're producing at the moment, the scale is almost a little bit scary, if I'm honest, because we've got to balance the markets that we open up with, you know, with our ability to supply short term. So to answer your question, the market or the opportunity is far larger than what we can supply.
Now, deer do not produce a lot of milk. This seems to be kind of the crunch point for the whole project, really. The yield is not very high and the investment must be huge.
Yes. So when you compare it, when you compare deer to other ruminants, the production or yield, if you like, is much lower. We're focused on value, not volume. So we're trying to, I guess, challenge that paradigm. We've had experience, I guess, through our involvement with sheep milking to, I guess, witness firsthand the power of genetics and, you know, selecting based on production traits to see what sort of improvements we can get there. And we're really confident there's, you know, a great opportunity to increase from where we're at. And we're already, you know, seeing improvements year on year as we get better at selecting hinds who are good producers. So look, it's not going to be an overnight thing, and the important part of it is ensuring that the price out the other side does warrant the investment, and it does create a pathway for other farmers to look at this and think this could be complementary, you know, to my business operation.
Are you going to be growing the herd yourself, Pāmu, or are you going to be leaving this to other farmers to take up the baton?
Absolutely, we're going to be growing internally, and we've got plans underway ahead of next season. We also, you know, continue our partnership with Peter and Sharon McIntyre, who are a private farming family based out of Gore, who are also looking at ways to expand their operation. And absolutely, you know, we would entertain, you know, discussions with other third parties or other private farming organisations around, you know, possible expansion of this, for sure.
Back in the paddock, the mob is getting a feed of deer nuts. Pāmu's Jason Halford explains the 200 hectares used to be a support block for Pāmu's organic dairy farms.
Deer are real grazers, so, you know, they like to forage around and have different types of feed. So, you know, we're basically lucerne here, but we'd definitely like to see in the future bringing in some mixed swards and getting some plantain and chicory into that. So just to give them something else to eat.
Yeah, we're at the tail end of the rut, so we may not hear a stag roar if we do it. Quite exciting, but it's later in the day now, and the chances are slimmer. They're pretty exhausted after their a few weeks of mating that they've already had.
Will farmers be persuaded to give it a go? It's niche, intensive, but as Hamish Glendinning says, full of potential.
Pāmu, as a state-owned enterprise, part of its role is to try some of the hard stuff. Of course, we have to be exemplar farmers and, you know, make a profit, return a dividend. But part of our role is to use our scale, as, you know, in this case, being New Zealand's largest deer farmer, to look at ways in which we can innovate to ensure that, you know, the industry is going to be around in 50 years' time. And, you know, what you've seen with the deer industry over time is, you know, huge cyclical, you know, pricing. And so we believe that if we can establish a new industry or, you know, a new market for deer milk, which can reduce volatility and, you know, improve confidence in deer farming, then that's a great outcome. And Pāmu, you know, do have a role to play in that.
Time to put the product to the test. Should we give it a taste?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. It's quite a different texture from normal cow's milk.
It is. Yeah, it's definitely creamy. It's thicker, I think.
It's definitely thicker.
It's thicker.
I can feel my skin getting younger as I sip.
That's the one.
Joking aside, it did taste delicious. It has much higher protein and calcium than cow's milk, so you don't need much of it, but it is expensive. By the way, Hamish told me they're expanding into Taiwan too. We'll put some links up on our website to some of the research mentioned in that story, and photos too. And RNZ video journalist Samuel Rillstone's also made a great film of our visit. Head to our webpage, rnz.co.nz/countrylife.